Hey, everybody, Josh Sigurdsson of World Alternative Media here, and we're joined by Kirk Elliott, PhD, by the way, double PhD, and author of 11 books, and of course, a world-renowned speaker. First of all, we're really happy to be joined by you today.
It's great to be with you. How is it going?
Oh, it's going well. I mean, the world's getting crazier by the day, but it gives us more to talk about because I wanted to start off by kind of going into a story that's been all of the news as of today. There's been a lot of speculation about it over the past few weeks that China is stocking up on historical amounts of gold in order to cut dependence on the greenback, on the dollar. And we're seeing a lot of these moves around the world of governments stocking up on gold while we see other countries around the world that are more familiar to us in the past several years, actually selling their gold reserves. Places like Canada is a great example. I've personally talked to the former finance minister of Canada about this on our show a couple years ago, and he said gold doesn't have any value. So we have people in the Western world just absolutely delusional about the value of gold. And then we have the people that are really looking to take over the U.S. economy as a world reserve, stocking up on gold. What do you think?
Well, it's a very interesting thing that you brought up because why would people in the West not like gold? Well, it's because they're steeped deep into the fiat currency system, right? But but here's the thing, and I'm an American. I want America to prosper and succeed and have our currency strong, right, and banking system strong, but it's simply not. And we've had bad policies since the Federal Reserve Act that have caused our demise, right? And so then you look at what the East is doing, you look what the BRICS nations are doing, and you know what? They're winning this battle. I mean, and I hate to say it, but they're absolutely winning because they're doing something that's very smart, and that is they're backing their currency with gold. So in a world where things are losing value, like very quickly, like for example, how much has the US dollar declined in the last 110 years since the Federal Reserve Act? Well, 96.75%, right? It's only worth 3 cents based on, and you know, that's the hidden tax, the insidious nature of printing money without discretion, right? So little story to kind of amplify that. If you go back to the 1920s, Josh, we've got a $20 bill was the equivalent of 1 ounce of gold. That's why the old 1 ounce of gold coins back then had a $20 face value on it, right? It said 20 bucks. Well, so here's the thing. What could you do with it? You could go to the bank, you could go to Sears, you could go whatever was around back then and use each one interchangeably because the dollar was backed by gold. Well, the question is, what would it buy you, right? So it would buy you a finely tailored men's suit, a shirt, a tie, a belt, and shoes, right? That was its purchasing power. So fast forward to today, 110 years later. Remember, the dollar's lost 96.65%. So what does 20 bucks get you? Well, you might, if you're lucky, be able to go to Chili's or Applebee's for date night, right? For 20 bucks. But 1 ounce of gold at $1,800 an ounce still gets you a finely tailored men's suit, a shirt, a tie, a belt, and shoes, right? So it's maintained its purchasing power over that time, where the dollar has eroded. So what China is doing with the BRICS nations, de facto backing of their currency with gold, not just with gold, but now by bringing Saudi Arabia into the mix, taking away the petrodollar status away from the US dollar, right? And actually bringing oil-backed currency into the BRICS nations. So this becomes an interesting problem for the West. So for London and New York, the Western-based financial system, we're stuck, right? Because what China's doing is they are vying to be the world's global economic superpower to match its manufacturing superpower and its big military with nuclear capability, everything, right? So they're building towards this. Now, what is our response to this economic warfare? Well, China's playing it pretty smart. Not saying I agree with it. I'm just saying that they're playing it really smart. They're dumping U.S. treasuries on the open market. They're dumping European treasuries on the open market. They're dumping Japanese treasuries on the open market. to the tune of trillions of dollars worth of these things, right? So America still has a debt ceiling that we have to expand every single year. We have entitlements. We have Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. We have to fund infrastructure bills, build back better plans, inflation reduction acts, all of that stuff, right? So if we're not getting foreign capital inflow, then what? Well, they're going to have to go to the printing press, press the red button, and start printing money like there's no tomorrow in an inflate or die scenario, which causes even more inflation.
Yeah.
Oh, well, now what? When they cause inflation, the policy mechanism that they use to slow that down is to raise interest rates, increase the cost of borrowing. So here you've got Jerome Powell, chairman of the Fed, that last week said, sorry, America, you know, but we've got a major problem with inflation here, right? So, but interest rates have gone up so much that we're now killing the economy. This is my paraphrase of what he was saying. He didn't say these exact words, but this is what he was thinking. It's like, we can't keep raising rates at the huge rates, 0.75 point every single time, like we've done for the last 4 months. Therefore, we're going to have to slow down the rate of growth of inflation. Here's where it gets sticky, right? It's because mainstream media has said, hey, they're winning the war against inflation. They can slow down the rate of growth of interest rates now. That's not why they did it. They did it because they're killing real estate. You know, real estate's down 10% in the last 30 days. Americans have lost $1.5 trillion worth of equity in their homes today because of the rising rates. That's why they're doing it. They don't want to kill the economy overnight. So, but what he said after that was even worse, which he said, we're going to slow down the rate of growth of interest rates, but we're going to keep raising them indefinitely until inflation dies, right? So here's where China's probably saying, sweet, look what we just did, right? We are going to cause the dismantling of the Western financial system, and we're building up our basically stable currency system that's backed by gold, and they're actually winning this battle. Because when you have a world that's consumed with debt, that has debt up to its eyeballs, and you raise rates month after month after month after month, the debt service, cost of that debt service goes up. Most people are 1 to 2 missed paychecks away from filing for bankruptcy because we're living right at the margin.
Right.
So therefore, they're going to slow down their spending. When you slow down your spending, corporate revenues come down. When corporate revenues come down, stock prices go down, right?
Right.
So this is the big framework that we're seeing, is reduction, actually collapse of the stock market. The bond market's toast for probably decades, because the value of bonds goes up when interest rates come down. When interest rates go up, the value of bonds comes down, right? It's an inverse relationship.
Right.
So that's done. Real estate's done for a while, because nobody pays cash for houses. They finance them.
Yeah.
And if banks are running out of money, interest rates are going up, cost of borrowing's going up, people's wages are coming down, they can't afford it. It's like, oh, so China's saying, how about instead of a world of fiat-based currency, how about we back our currency with gold, give somebody, international investors, other countries, a reason why they would want our currency over the currencies of the West? And brother, they're winning this battle because they're playing it smart.
They are. And, you know, at the same time, we're witnessing essentially the control collapse in a lot of ways, because it's hard to imagine that anyone could be so stupid as to do what they're doing to farmers, with the supply chain, to the energy grid, to the economy, to the real estate market, at the exact same time as China is making all of these incredible moves. And we're going to get back to that and circle back to that in a moment. I do want to urge people that are watching right now to check that link in the description for KirkElliottPhD.com/web. And there's a lot of great opportunities, a bunch of free special reports on there, and you can go and actually buy gold and silver, which I think is extremely important for people to have physically in their hands in the face of what we're witnessing right now. But yes, we have a completely unsustainable economy right now. And it almost, it's like it's by design because it's so stupid what they're doing. You have farmers that can't afford, you know, fertilizer right now. Inflation's bad enough. And what do? They come in with more climate policies. Great. That's going to help us in the middle of an energy crisis. It's absurd. But, you know, with all that said, Mr. Elliott, I wanted to kind of ask you a little bit about, you have a your own method of calculating inflation versus what, you know, since the 1980s, they've completely changed the way they calculate inflation in the United States, and it's completely wrong. I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah. So this is what I did one of my dissertations on, right? I developed a new methodology for measuring inflation because the way that the Bureau of Labor Statistics measures it and the central banks use it is broken. It's completely bogus. So you go back to the early 80s, and a lot of your viewers will, if they're old enough, they will remember, man, if we got a house in 1983, the interest rate on a 30-year mortgage was 18% if you had good credit, right? Yeah. So as an economist, I was like, oh, okay, that's what the number is, but why did we have that number, right? Why was it that high? Well, coming out after the Carter years, Jimmy Carter, one of the worst economic presidents ever in the history of the country, who's actually probably doing silent cheers right now because he's realizing I'm no longer the worst economic president ever. The one we've got now is, right? So what he did, horrible economy, people weren't working, huge recession, people weren't spending. There was an oil crisis, rationing at the pumps. Inflationary pressures were sky high. The highest marginal tax bracket was like 90%. Right? I mean, the economy stunk. And because of that, they had to keep printing money and causing inflation. So President Reagan came in 1980, along with Paul Volcker, chairman of the Fed, and said, hey, America, we can fix this. It's not going to be pretty, but we just have to jack up interest rates to like 18% to slow down inflation. Key point for today. If you want to use interest rates to impact inflation, the interest rate has to be greater than the inflation rate. Okay, key thing that we need to remember for the story I'm about to tell you about inflation, right? So inflation at the time was 14.25%. That's why they had to raise rates to 18%. And what did it do? Slowed down inflation. They started lowering interest rates then to get back to a point where Reagan at the time said, okay, we lowered rates, we fixed inflation, built a framework for economic success that lasted about 20 years, right? Mm-hmm. So fast forward to 1996. President Clinton at the time was trying to figure out a way to lower government expenditures, right? It's like, okay, what if we can arbitrarily lower the inflation rate because cost of living adjustments are too high with high inflation? So much for the party for the people, right? They're sticking it to the people that voted to them and people with fixed incomes. So they lowered interest rates. They lowered inflation through substitution and different things, which made the consumer price index completely bogus. This is why I did my dissertation, was to fix that. So to explain why they did it is they needed to lower expenditures, but how did they fix it? So consumer price index is a basket of about 30 goods, right? Let's just say steak. You know, the meat that you would eat was one of those things in the basket. Yeah. And the price of steak went up 40%. Well, the BLS would say, oh, nuts, we can't have this. This is causing inflation way too high. Steak's up 40%. So what they did was they substituted it with hamburger. Mm-hmm. Let's say hamburger was 30% less than steak. So what did they say happened to the price of steak? Remember, it went up 40%. They substituted it with hamburger. They said the price of steak actually came down 30%. It's not the same. They're not measuring the same thing, but yet they said the price of steak came down because they used substitution. So when they do that with product after product after product in the CPI, it understates inflation. So today, the consumer price index is at 7.7%. That's the official number. After Clinton's methodology of assigning the Boskin Commission in 1996 to understate inflation, right? So here's where our pocketbooks, our wallets tell us inflation's not 7.7%. Not when the price of gas at the pump has doubled since Biden came in. Not when the price of a used car is up 40%. Not when the price of groceries are up over 50%. I mean, you go across the board, everything's like soaring. It's like, it's not 7.7%. So the methodology then is what I figured out in my algorithm. And John Williams at ShadowStats has a different algorithm, but comes up with about the same number, which says, okay, we're on to something, right? So what is that number? You multiply CPI by 2.8, and that will give you close to the real number. So 7.7 times 2.8, that puts us at about 25% inflation. That gives you the equivalent apples to apples comparison of what inflation was in 1983. Why does this matter, Josh? Well, because they're raising rates to slow down inflation. It's not going to work unless they raise rates to over 25%, because that's what true inflation is actually at. So are they going to do that? I don't think politicians have the guts to actually do that, because in a world that's consumed with debt, consumers, corporate America, municipal government, state governments, the federal government, you jack up interest rates 25%, you kill the economy overnight. Mm-hmm. So that they can't really use that policy mechanism, but they're pretending to do it by just raising rates incrementally. Right. But all that that's going to do is kill the stock market, kill real estate, kill the bond market. So with one hand, they're creating inflation by printing money out of thin air. With the other hand, they're saying, hey, we've got this bad inflation. We got to raise rates to slow it down. And I'm telling you, it's not going to work unless they raise rates so high, or the other way to stop inflation is to stop printing money. Mm-hmm. They're not going to do that either. So they just pretend, and they're kicking the can down the road for the next congressman, the next congresswoman, with it later, because nobody wants the economy to fall on their watch.
Right.
See, inflation is a very politicized number. And this is what we're seeing. So what this is having then is a detrimental impact on the global economy. Because as we raise rates, you know, rates have gone from, on a 30-year mortgage, 3.22% in January to now we're sitting at about 7.4%. today. Mm-hmm. So in 11 months, it's more than doubled, right? So the federal funds rate has gone from 0 to 4%. That's not even a number you can measure, because you can't divide by zero, right? So it's gone up a lot, right? So So here's where other countries, now let's say we just raised rates another 0.75 point. Jerome Powell says we're going to raise them another 0.5 point in 2 weeks, and we'll keep raising rates until inflation dies. Inflation's not going to die, which means we're stuck with rising rates almost indefinitely, based on his own words. So what does Europe do? Well, Europe says, wait a second, the United States just raised rates. Now people are going to start investing in U.S. treasuries because their rates are a little bit higher. So we're going to raise our rates. And then Japan says, wait a second, the U.S. and Europe just raised rates. We're going to raise our rates too. This is currency warfare. This is competitive devaluations of currency. So then everyone's on an equal playing field again. We have to raise rates again to attract more foreign capital. Then Europe does it, then Japan does it. Equal playing field again. And so this cycle goes on, and it's going to kill the global economy. Because if there were no debt, Josh, let's say you had no debt, I had no debt, the world had no debt. Who cares if interest rates are 30%? Doesn't really impact you if you have no debt. Mm-hmm. But the reality is the global economy is riddled with debt. In fact, the Bank for International Settlements just yesterday came out with a report that said foreign exchange, you know, currency exchange swaps at big banks now is $80 trillion market in hidden exchanges. Okay, So what does that mean? It says there is so much debt of these things floating back around in derivatives debt that once this debt bubble starts to implode, it's lights out for the banking industry. It's lights out for the global economy, because they will not be able to sustain and print enough money to keep markets afloat. We are right on the cusp of basically competitive devaluations causing an inflationary spiral like what we saw in Venezuela and Argentina and Weimar Republic Germany, when their currencies no longer have international value, they have to print their way out of it because they still have it. This is where we're at globally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, by the way, I should add that Argentina went through 12 inflationary events in 100 years. So if anyone, if we're supposed to do the opposite of anyone, we should do the opposite of what Argentina is doing. But, you know, it's interesting the way they manipulate the inflation numbers reminds me a lot of the way that they manipulate the employment numbers versus the labor force participation rate. Every president says I have the best employment numbers, and every single one of them, it's just extremely manipulative tactics. But, you know, going forward, we have basically the death nail in the dollar coffin right now. Saudi Arabia recently acknowledged that they would like to move possibly towards BRICS. They acknowledged this to South Africa recently. And when Saudi Arabia pulls out of the dollar, it's a big sign of what's to come. We have the pound down 40% on the year. We have that, which is just astronomical. We have the euro sometimes below parity with the dollar. And of course, with this recent move, there's a lot that have been asking, are we moving into a so-called economic reset where we will actually see China with this basket of currencies, similar to the special drawing rights, come forward with a new global reserve currency?
Well, 100%. So sometimes people throw rotten tomatoes at me, right? When I make this statement, but we haven't necessarily had a completely fiat-based currency yet until now, because back in the day, we were backed by gold. Well, in the early 1970s, Nixon closed the gold window, but what was it replaced with? The petrodollar, right? So we went from gold backing to oil backing on our currency, because all international settlements in oil were done in U.S. dollars, which meant there was inflow coming into the U.S. dollar. It was built in demand. We were the world's reserve currency, right? Because every country on the planet uses oil for everything, right? So now Saudi Arabia basically told China just a week and a half ago, it's like, hey, China, you're our biggest trading partner. You buy more oil from us than anybody. And you know what? You don't have to pay for it in US dollars anymore. You know, use your own currency, use whatever. So of course they're going to say that because they want admittance into the BRICS nations, right? So, but in a bigger, more ominous storm cloud is Saudi Arabia is the largest oil producer on the planet. China's the largest consumer of oil on the planet, right? So this isn't small potatoes. Mm-hmm. This is the biggest oil producer and the biggest consumer of it saying, we're getting rid of the petrodollar, right? Huge, massive nail in the coffin, like you just said. But there's other countries too. Russia told Poland, Russia told India, Russia told Italy. It's like, hey, if you want to buy oil or gas from us, you don't have to use petrodollar. You don't have to use US dollar, use something else, right? So use rubles. So there's country after country after country that's now being dismantled. At this point, this little trend moves on for not very long. We lose status as the world's reserve currency. Then we are completely fiat-based currency. There's no gold backing. There's no oil backing. There's no nothing. And this is the death knell. This is the nails in the coffin that will kill demand for the US dollar, which means then we just have to inflate or die to keep our economy afloat. Who knows this? China knows this, right? Mm-hmm. So China, vying for the world's economic superpower status, they know that if we have to inflate or die, the value of our currency goes to nothing. They're building a currency system, their own banking system with their own SWIFT program, bringing all these countries into BRICS, you know, oil countries, agricultural producing countries. They have a strong military with nuclear capability. They, as much as I hate to say this, are winning that battle.
Well, and sorry to interrupt, but what we're witnessing right now is even countries like India with China. India has been a historical enemy of China, and they are in on this as much as Russia, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Egypt, South Africa, Brazil. I mean, it is a huge economic order. And one of the things that concerns me the most about it, not just the move to a new reset of the financial system, it's also the fact that they really are aiming for what the people have in their hands to be digital. So they'll back it with gold, but the idea is CBDCs across the board.
It is. So here's something interesting about CBDCs. And so what is CBDC, central bank digital currency, right? It's centralized cryptocurrency at the central bank level. Mm-hmm. It's not just America who's the Fed that's looking at it. It's 90% of the central banks around the world. This is a big thing, right? So what's the messaging behind it? Well, I think what we just saw with FTX exchange going under, with BlockFi going under, right, is and now entering probably into a crypto dark winter as people lose trust in cryptocurrencies. Prior to this, and even now, how many people trust governments? Well, probably not many, right? There's a lot of distrust, right? Yeah. So why would you trust a cryptocurrency that's backed by a government central bank? Well, you probably wouldn't. Okay. Here's where it gets squirrely. What if you kick the big kid out of the sandbox, right? Which has been the US dollar, which was decentralized cryptocurrency like Bitcoin, like Dogecoin, like Ethereum, right? It's like, okay, decentralized cryptocurrency just went under in 72 hours, you know, $16 billion of money just vaporized, right? So how can you trust a decentralized system? Oh, you should trust us, a centralized cryptocurrency, right? This is what central bank digital currency is. This is how they can message it to have people trust them. But should you trust them? No, has nothing to do with stabilizing the economy, has nothing to do with fighting inflation. It's all about people control. It's all about programmable money, according to Dr. Pippa Malmgren at the World Government Forum in Abu Dhabi, said, we get programmable money. We know the source of all transactions. We know the source of all funds, so we can stop human trafficking, drug trafficking, arms trafficking, money laundering, right? Great, we all want that. That's a great benefit. The flip side of that coin is the ugly one. And that is, well, transparency of all transactions. If they don't like your religion and what church you donate to, flip the switch. No more donation. If they don't like your political party, if they don't like where you go eat, because let's say you go eat at Taco Bell every single day and health insurance premiums are going through the roof, they're going to say, Josh, you're part of the problem, not part of the solution. No more fast food for you, right? The point is there's complete transparency of all transactions. There's no financial privacy at all. And it's all about people control, right? It's all about if you step out of line from what they want and your digital social profile, which will give you the access to your funds in a digital crypto type world, well, then we'll just shut you off until you comply. Yeah. With the ability to buy or sell, right? This is what this is all about and going to. And so what central bank digital currency to me is all about, getting rid of paper money, because that's private, mm-hmm. right? And they want to know the source of everything. And with a digital social profile, say you have this health passport, right? And you didn't get vaxxed. It's like, oh, you're part of the problem too. It's like, no, right. No, you can't buy or sell until you get vaxxed. Whatever they don't like about you, if you walk out of line from the narrative, well, then they could shut you off from buying or selling. That's all that central bank digital currency is all about.
It helps the banks a lot, considering their cash deposit ratios are almost nothing. And then at the same time, you know, you have an energy crisis, you have a supply chain crisis. Well, this is a good time to bring in your social credit score, your carbon credit score, which, by the way, after COP27, G20 and APEC recently, many banks are already implementing carbon credit scores into their banking apps. Now, they're not forcing it yet, but it's always yet until they are. And of course, it benefits them greatly. We've had countless governments around the world praising the idea of carbon credit scores. So again, you mentioned, you know, oh, the vax pass, health pass or something like that. It's like, well, there's a litmus test right there for exactly what they're openly doing. This isn't a conspiracy theory anymore. It was a few years ago if you said this, but today most of the major banks around the world are openly acknowledging that there will be mandates on this eventually, are openly acknowledging the 15-minute city project, which means that you're only allowed to go within your neighborhood without a permit from the government. all sounds crazy, but you go to the, you know, Melbourne government websites in Australia or Canadian government website or the UK government website, and they're openly saying this is what we're doing. So that is a concern for a lot of people going forward, because again, you could succumb to bail-in regimes, you could succumb to tracking and tracing, you could succumb to credit scores that very much destroy the basis of humanity itself, which is our ability to move around, be free, live independently. So I wanted to get into, I mean, the importance of holding physical gold and silver in the face of all this, because of course it has been it has been stolen from the people before. We saw the creation of the Exchange Stabilization Fund and the IMF with the gold that was taken from the people under FDR. But at the same time, we also know, statistically speaking, most people didn't comply with such an absurd mandate. Going forward, how important in this technocratic kind of world we're living in is gold and silver physically?
Well, it's huge because it's kind of a get out of the system kind of a currency, because it's private. You take delivery of it, it's a thing. So we've seen, okay, in the past, companies can go out of business overnight, right? We saw this happen with FTX, with BlockFi. We saw this happen with numerous companies when they simply just go out of business. What about Enron, right? The largest stock company in the world, right? They went out of business. So When was the last time gold or silver went to zero? Well, never. How about oil or gas? Well, never. How about a used car, right? Or a new car? Well, zero. You can't just go into a lot and it's like it's worth zero. No, things don't go to zero. So there's ultimately safety in that. And our goal as wise and prudent investors is to minimize risk and maximize return. So you've got a built-in floor. Why do you have a built-in floor? Because it costs a lot of money to get silver out of the earth, for example. I mean, current estimates are pushing around $20 an ounce to get silver out of the earth. Are miners going to pull it out of the earth if it gets to $15, $10 an ounce, $5 an ounce? Well, no, they're just going to stop. They're not going to lose 10, 15, $20 per ounce every time they pull something out of the earth. They'll just stop. And if they stop, then you have no supply with high demand and prices go through the ceiling and then they start again, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a built-in floor. Now, outside of that, you've got supply chain disruptions. You have a short squeeze. You have the ratio between gold and silver, the historical ratio. You've got all this stuff and historically low COMEX deliverable inventories. Silver is poised to actually skyrocket. In fact, just over the last 12 weeks, as all this dark economic news that you and I are talking about right now, stock market coming down, bond market collapsing, real estate collapsing, cryptocurrencies collapsing, right? Political chaos, geopolitical conflict, everything we're seeing. Silver's up about 25% now over the last 12 weeks. 25% in 3 months or 4 months, right? It's like, this is amazing, because you project that forward, we're looking at 100% plus gain in a 1 year span. Nobody's going to cry crocodile tears over that kind of return, but we have to ask, why is that return there? Well, the fundamentals that cause growth in the metals market are the same fundamentals that cause shrinkage in stocks, bonds, mutual funds, right? Which are unsustainable debt. Well, check, we have that. Inflationary pressures, check, we have that. Mm-hmm. Geopolitical conflict, yep, political chaos. We have all of those. All of those cause traditional assets, stocks, bonds, mutual funds to come down. Those cause gold and silver to go up. So in a world where we want to minimize risk, maximize return, and look into what can we do to protect and preserve everything we've worked our whole life to accumulate from erosion, from some dumb government policy that we can't control, well, you just identify the trends. The fundamental forces causing that trends are just getting stronger, not weakening. But you brought up a really good point that a lot of people ask me every single week. It's like, I don't trust the government. I think they're going to confiscate it. Just like they did back in the Roosevelt days. Well, I don't think that they will. Not that I trust the government. I don't think that they will do it on this, because different era, different time, different reasons, right? So after World War I, U.S. government ran out of money. I mean, they were basically bankrupt, right? And so Roosevelt came in at the time and said, hey, America, we got to issue war bonds. And remember, back then, gold and the dollar were interchangeable, right? So in the war bonds, the country was bankrupt and they wanted to keep their gold. So he said, I'm forcing the issue. You got to invest in war bonds. I'm going to confiscate gold where you can't have it, right? Forcing people to invest in the war bonds. So fast forward to today. Gold is not a fungible currency, right? It's, you can't go to the bank with it. You can't go to the store with it and spend it now. Now, in a barter world, yes, you can. Excuse me, same with silver. Mm-hmm. But here's where it's not a fungible currency. So it's just an investment like anything else. But here's the bigger thing. Only 2% of the population owns gold. Only 0.9% owns silver. Would the government ever waste time trying to do a confiscation on something that's that small of a percentage? No, they want to maximize their impact. They're going to do, they've already tipped their hat, like what they've done in Argentina, Venezuela, Cyprus, Greece, and that's a bail-in tax, where with the stroke of a pen, they can say, hey, tomorrow, 10% tax, you might've had $100,000 in your bank account tonight, tomorrow it's going to be worth 90, we're just taking it. They're going to want to impact the 98% of the masses that's low-lying digital type assets that's easy to identify and get, right? So this is where a tangible asset that you take delivery of is so important for privacy protection and safety.
Yeah, I don't think people recognize as much as they should that how insolvent banks really are. I mean, I've always seen it as the 2008 recession never ended. It was just papered over. And essentially, we're seeing the end results of it start to come home to roost. But, you know, the banks are literally, I've seen multiple banks that have less than 1% of deposits in cash. So we saw recently runs on the banks in China, and we saw that people were just their apps shut down, and the zero COVID policy pushed them into the corner. They couldn't protest, brought in the military and everything. Now it's not going to get that crazy anytime soon yet in the United States, but the possibility is there. And when they can just, like you mentioned, bail-ins tax you out of your account 10% if you're lucky, hey, it could be 30%. It will eventually happen someday in the future. It's in the budget of multiple governments around the world. We've seen it in Cyprus. So it's a reason to be concerned and another reason to ensure your wealth. Again, I always tell people, do your own research. I'm not telling you to invest in gold or silver. I'm telling you, I think it's a good idea to have wealth insurance in gold and silver. It's a different thing. Banks like to play around with the price of gold and make as much money as they can off of it. Individuals need to stock it, in my opinion, and be prepared for when the economy inevitably goes down. We're overdue already in the United States. So I'd like to hear from you a little bit about the importance of your services that you do over at KirkElliottPhD.com. And again, I urge people to check that link in the description. We are very proud to affiliate with what you guys are doing because, of course, we need people out there that are intelligent. You're also into theology. You have a crazy background, and we couldn't get into it on one show, but I'm really proud to work with you guys. You guys are doing really amazing work. So again, people could go into this description of this video, click the link, KirkElliottPhD.com/wham, and go, and if you want, liquidate your IRA or 401k or 403b or checkings or whatever, and get physical gold and silver. I think very important. And you also have holding facilities. Can you go into the importance of the services you do and kind of explain them a little bit?
Yeah. So The philosophy of our firm is people over profit, right? If you focus on people, profit will come. If you ever start focusing on profit, people will leave, right? But right. That's the norm of most of the companies around the world, right? Is focus on profit, right? Just profit, profit, profit. This is where the blending of my economics PhD and my theology PhD come in. It's like, that's how you do get people over profit. And so our philosophy is we focus on the relationship. To me, buying and selling, right? They're almost like the necessary evils. You have to buy to get into a trend, you sell to get out of one, but life happens in between the bookends of those transactions. This is where our firm thrives because my team of advisors, my entire staff, I mean, we love people, right? And so we want to hold your hand through the economy, this horrible economy that we're living in. We want lifetime relationships with our clients. We will let you know when it's time to buy, sell, reallocate, get out of Dodge, do whatever needs to be done, right? But in addition to that, that requires action. Non-action items is every single week, I send out a video email to all of my clients, letting them know what I'm seeing politically, economically, socially, what we should be careful of, what we should be joyful about, right? Because when you're in the right place at the right time, that will put a smile on your face. And what does that do? It starts to melt away the financial anxiety that people have, because I would say, not an exaggeration, 99% of the people that call me are just gripped and paralyzed with fear, right? And you can hear it, you can feel it, you can sense it. They don't know what to do. Well, fear does two things. Either A, it causes you to put your head in the sand like an ostrich in the storm, right? And just hopefully it blows over. And when you come back up, it's gone. Causes you to not do anything, or it causes you to make the wrong decision. So what fear does. So what we want to do is, with logic and sound mind and that first step of faith, even give us a call. It's like, we understand what you're saying. We want to get out of the path of this hurricane. We've worked way too hard for our money. So we will ask you questions. We'll find out what your dreams, what your aspirations, what your goals are, right? Because everybody's different, which is why we don't have an e-commerce site. I want to get to know you and understand what your goals are so we can strategically map out a successful future for your finances, right? So myself, one of my team of advisors, we will do that. And then the process is easy. Once we know what you want, we can do tax-free rollovers from IRA to IRA, old 401ks, 403bs into an IRA, going into physical metals. We're not talking about paper, no ETFs, no mining shares, no mutual funds, no proxies, right? It's just physical, tangible metals in an IRA. Or you can take delivery of metals outside of an IRA if it's just a cash account, right? The thing is, these are physical assets. And I'm a firm believer that there is no such thing as a bad investment. There's just bad timing for investments, because in the Trump years, in the Reagan years, both, you had identical economic policies. And that was lowering taxes, lowering interest rates, and creating jobs. Mm-hmm. Well, that caused people to spend. When people spend, corporate revenues go up. When that happens, stock prices go up. So it's not that I'm against stocks. Hear me on that. They're great when the time is right. But right now, they're absolutely toxic. I wouldn't touch them with a bajillion foot pole. So really, what we have now under Biden's economic plan for America is rising taxes, rising interest rates to slow down inflation that they created by printing money out of thin air and paying people to stay home, right? So opposite policy will have an opposite outcome. We put all of those puzzle pieces together to map out a strategy for success. Now, our consultations are free, right? We never charge for our time, never have, never will. This is where we differ from pretty much every firm on the planet. That is, well, the relationship part, of course, because people aren't a number, they're a person. They have dreams, and we want to realize those. But ultimately, when you liquidate, lock nothing. So whatever the depository is paying for metals on that day, you get all of it, right? Most firms charge transactionally, like buying commission when you buy, commission when you sell, and they forget about you in between. This is where we're different. We focus on the in-between. We don't charge you when you liquidate. And the commission when you purchase, the cost of ownership when you purchase, it's 8%, right? Mm-hmm. So for all intents and purposes, once gold or silver move a little over 8%, you're about break even. Everything after that's pure profit for the rest of your life, because we don't charge anything else, right? I'm a keep it simple, silly kind of a guy, right? We want complete transparency there and accountability to you. And boy, to put it into perspective, seriously, silver has moved about 25% in the last 12 weeks. Doesn't take very long to overcome that cost of ownership to break even and move forward with profit when there are no commissions on the back end, when there's nothing for assets under management, because it's your money, it's not mine. And my own personal belief, I don't think it's your money either. I think it's God's money, right? And we all need to be wise stewards with that. So when you look at it with, in light of that, this is where we thrive. And the key is, we will let you know when it's time to do anything with your assets. So you don't have to watch the markets like a hawk. We do, and we'll come alongside you to make sure you're in the right place at the right time, the majority of the time. So that's a long answer to your short question, but that's what we do.
Well, I really appreciate everything you do. And again, I have to do the legal jargon. This is not financial advice. Do your own due diligence. blah, 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 you know, the usual. But I urge people to check that link in the description. And, you know, there's a lot of services there and there's a lot of stuff that can really help you get out of this rut when we're walking face first into likely one of the most historic financial resets in world history. And that's saying a lot because, I mean, there's been quite a few. Go back to ancient Rome, which I know you have studied as well. In your work. But again, there's so much that we're witnessing all hit us at the exact same time. And it doesn't have to be doom and gloom. There are options, there are solutions. It's all about, we could watch doom and gloom videos all day, but at the end of the day, what we need to do is say, okay, yes, there are negatives. We need to make positives of this. There are solutions in front of us. And I don't want to lose all my money, you know, in the bank. I don't want to lose it all in whatever this crazy cashless reset is. Look at history. Gold and silver have always prevailed as wealth insurance against financial catastrophes. So again, my friends, check those links in the description and get prepared now, because it's better to be overly prepared than underprepared, and waiting longer and longer and procrastinating isn't helping anybody here. So anyways, I appreciate you talking with us, Kirk. It's always good to hear from people that actually know what's going on and are applying those solutions and helping their clients. So I really appreciate you joining us today, and I hope to talk with you again sometime soon.
Awesome. We'll do it again soon. Just let me know and I'll be back sharing everything I can with your audience.
Excellent. Thank you.